Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Help. Hello, everyone, and welcome to what I promise will be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and across the way, George P. Fraser. George, you are as cool as Remington Steele. Of course, nobody knows who that is. You remember that show?
Yeah,
Remington Steele?
Who was the guy? Dark hair?
Yeah, yeah.
What was the actor?
I can't remember.
Well, you can't bring it up if you don't know that.
Well, but I remember the character, Remington Steele. I don't remember the actor.
He had a short run on there.
He did have a short run. But he was cool, and he reminded me kind of how cool you can be at times.
You know who I
Not
thought
tonight,
was cool? Do you remember Honey West?
No.
That was the
what is
show
that?
There.
What is that?
She was like a private detective thing. Let's get back on track. It's about that genre. What'd she do to Alex? He's gone.
Yeah, we have on the board, we have Logan Rausch tonight, which sounds like a 70s cover band, doesn't it?
Cool name.
Very cool. We're glad he's here.
We should bring him on.
No. We're not going to do that. That could compromise the integrity of the show.
Yeah, we sure have never done that before, have we?
That is so true.
We've got a great show tonight. Great guest.
Really?
I've heard him
say
speak.
More.
Well, I heard him speak. We're
not bringing him on yet.
No, we spoke at a gathering of recovery people at a large church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and I was second and he was first. And you know, when you're in that position, you're kind of hoping the guy's good, but you don't want him to be really good.
Right.
And he was really good.
Awesome. And so, he's here tonight.
And he wrote a book. He's here tonight. He's got a great story.
Pierce Bronson. That was the actor.
Very good.
Pierce Bronson. I think you're as cool as him.
He is. Thank you.
There is, you go with Mr. Grammar. Can you ever give me one break one night?
No.
Okay.
I can't. I buy you dinner every week.
I know.
Great shirt, by the way. I like that. So do you want to get on with the show here? Pierce Bronson.
Yeah.
Before he was James Bond.
That's right. That's right. Remington Steele. So let's talk about step two tonight. That's what we've got all queued up. And
well,
you're the step person, so go ahead.
The reason I wanted to talk about step two tonight is, obviously, we start off with one, is which we admitted we were powerless over drugs and alcohol and our life's unmanageable. And we go to two, and it says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And a lot of people either blow by that step or go, okay, I'm sane. Well, what is sanity? That's living in the truth, acting in the truth, and believing the truth, and we got to go, what is the truth? Jesus, I am the way.
Mm-hmm.
I am the life. I am the truth. I don't know how you can work this step if you're not a Christian, Bill, because if you're going to believe in the truth and it's not Christ-centered, how can it be the truth?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we get some people that might not be drinking, but maybe they have gambling issues, they have anger issues, they have sex issues. Like, welcome to life, everybody. But when we look at the word sanity, where we can see it is in our behavior. Okay, maybe we stop drinking, but are we still abusive to people? Are we still running our own show? And if you want to look at this, I'm reading a book by Jonathan Edwards, and he would always say, look at the fruit in a person's life. If they say they're saved, their life should show it. There should be a difference. So if you're in recovery and you stopped using, great. But what else is different in your life? Were you okay except you drank too much or you did drugs? I don't think so. So tonight I wanted to look at that step because I think a lot of people go from step 1 to 12, and I think a lot of Christians do that too. We want to share what we have without doing all the work. And when you come to step 2, you got to go, hey, a lot of my behavior, the way I think, is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We know from reading in Romans that we are transformed by the renewing of our mind, and what I want people to do is saturate yourself with the Word. We start every day, Bill, you said we have non-negotiables. We're in the Word the minute we get up and have that cup of coffee after our prayers. I want to start the day with God. And if you're not doing that and you think you're going to be okay, to me, that's insane. What say you about this?
Well, when you mention Romans 12:2, I want to go back and finish that whole verse.
Because
I think we have all had conversations with people and they say, I wonder what God's will is for my life. Maybe they're at a place where they don't know what God will have next for them. So they ask, what's God's will? And you go to Romans 12:2, and it says, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. That is God's will for you.
Great.
Yes, to not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
Can you read that again?
Well, I'm reading it in the New King James. Let me read it in NIV, if I may, because that's what I'm used to reading it in. And so here it is in NIV. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will.
Okay, so how do we renew our mind?
It starts with obedience. When you pray to God that you will be obedient. Now, if I may, George, I would like to shift over to Proverbs chapter 3, and I'm trying to memorize this whole chapter, and unfortunately I don't have it memorized quite yet. But in Proverbs chapter 3, it says, "My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you peace and prosperity."
I love that.
So don't forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart. So first of all, are God's commands in your heart? Or is it you calling your own shots, making your own decisions, deciding what you want to do? Or is it knowing what God's commands are, having them live in your heart, and then making decisions based on that?
Is that a general question? Because you're looking at me.
I'm looking at you specifically, Mr.
Okay,
Fraser.
Okay, now, and that's a great one. How can you keep God's commands if you don't know what they are? Let's start there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't spend time with God, how can you do that? So for me, the sanity starts, and it says, the step says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves. I think that comes from God.
It's like
the prodigal son's out there, and the thought occurs to him, I can go back to my father. That comes from God. So what I'm saying tonight is, if you're listening to this and this is tracking with you, maybe God is speaking to you, get the book out. Start reading the book. I always say start reading the book of John. That's what I was told. It worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
But every day, if you start that out, I've been doing a Matthew deal lately on the Beatitudes. And gosh, did I get away from that.
Mm-hmm.
And with all the hostility in the world and that, it just gives you a lot of Jesus to start the day. Love your enemies. Wow, that's a tall order.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we want to do, and that's the sanity is, I'm not stopping a behavior. I want to be Christ-like. Is this action God-honoring?
Mm-hmm.
That's why we get recovery people that go to bars and do everything they used to do, but they're not drinking.
That's nuts.
They're playing around. They're doing everything they used to do, but I'm not drinking. I'm doing great. No, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to step 3, where you make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God, you're supposed to be God-like. And you need to know the commandments.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know what he requires of you.
Okay, George, now I'm memorizing this in the New King James Version. So let me just go back to this one more time and give it to you in the New King James. My son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commands. Let your heart keep my commands.
Why the heart, Bill?
Well, that's the decision-making center of your being. That's where you make decisions.
That's your will, isn't it?
That's your will. So it's almost as if I'm reading this correctly, it sounds like you give permission to your heart to keep God's commands.
Well, one of the
know what they are, and then you say to your heart, I'm going to keep these.
Sorry, one of the first...
Don't ever interrupt me again.
I'll do it again, and I'll come over there on the break. So get ready.
You and what army?
I got Dave's a pretty big guy here. Dave and I are coming over.
Yeah.
One of the... We got hand signals. Somebody fair catch over there?
Yeah.
A two-minute warning?
Two-minute warning.
Okay. One of the first CDs you gave me was on Jeremiah 17, and it talks about the heart is desperately wicked. Who can know it?
Mm-hmm.
So really what we need to do if we're going to be transformed is we got to have a heart transplant.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a head cognitive behavioral change my thinking, I'll change my behavior. That can be helpful, but we need to change our heart, and we can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Only God can do that.
So a little bit more Proverbs 3, because I'm on a roll here.
And you're memorizing it out of the King James, but not the NIV.
The New King James.
Oh, the new one.
The New King James, yeah. Let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart, and so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man.
I like that.
I do too.
How do you get a New King James?
I don't know.
What'd they do with the old one?
What, am I the answer man?
No, you're the one reading it. you get a good deal on the Bible?
I did.
Okay, $2.99 in the discount rack.
Let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. What are you doing to write them on the tablet of your heart? How do you do that?
Isn't that Deuteronomy 6?
Well, I'm in Proverbs 3.
Yeah, but that's in Deuteronomy 6 also.
I'm sure it has another place of origin.
You know, about write that on your heart and share that at your table and teach it to your kids. I think the reason for this, Bill, and if we get out of step one and into step two and we're progressing to be more Christ-like, we need to spend time because this is the total opposite of what we are.
It's total opposite.
So you need to have God give an infusion into you of the word. I need it every day.
And you have to let your heart, you have to write them on the tablet of your heart. You have to take God's words, ingest them, eat them, have them be a part of who you are.
No better way to do that than to memorize them, right?
I couldn't agree more.
You know, I've hidden thy word in my heart, so I will not sin against thee.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, David Carlson in studio. What a story. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill George. Logan tonight on the board.
Logan Roush.
Matt Reynolds is here as well as
Matt
a visitor
Reynolds.
Checking up on Logan. We got all the bases covered tonight.
He's security.
He might be security.
Because he's packing.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I did.
We'll be back. All right, thanks for being with us tonight. Real Recovery, happiest hour on radio, I would say. What do you say, George?
I agree with you. You never know what's going to happen on this show.
Yeah, including you and I. We don't know what's going to happen.
Don't know what's going to happen. But they let us in every week.
With limited adult supervision.
You know what my favorite part about the show is? We get to see a living God, that it's not a fairy tale. When people talk about what he did in their lives, and he takes dead people and raises them up. It's beautiful.
Yes.
Every week, I love that.
I do, too. So let's jump into tonight's guest, David Carlson, in studio. We're so glad you're with us tonight. David, you started off, you grew up in what, rural Minnesota?
No, I grew up in Bloomington.
In Bloomington. Okay, well.
You know, we grew up in Edina, and you can see Edina from Bloomington.
Yeah.
Okay, for some reason I thought you were a farm boy.
You remember who Bob is, right?
Pardon?
You remember Bob, right?
I don't even know who you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, we need to vet our guests better. Yeah. But you're here and we're live.
We don't vet our guests at all, George. That's
the
problem.
Yeah.
So you grew up in Bloomington, Minnesota, and you were how big of a family?
I was the youngest of three boys.
Okay.
Yeah, grew up pretty much church kids. I mean, we grew up, mom and dad sang in the choir and you had Bible study and you just had kind of the Leave It to Beaver family.
Sweet. Sweet. And things went well for you. High school was pretty traditional. You went to Kennedy High School.
Yeah. Growing up, like I said, we were just basically good kids. You know, we were involved with church. I grew up and became kind of a leader in our high school youth ministry program. My nickname in high school was AJ because I'd go to the keggers after the football games and drink apple juice. You know, I was kind of slow to the party. But when I went away to college is where I kind of drifted away from what I grew up with, and you kind of took that rite of passage with being exposed to drinking on campus. And I kind of associated that with status. I mean, I was away from home for the first time. I was I was able to go to a private university, and I think one of the first few times I drank, it was with professors, having a fine wine and cheese. It was a social event that kind of came with status. So early on, I kind of put those two things together, and that ended up derailing me for quite a long time.
That sounds fun. I went to Bethel. I feel ripped off. it's interesting that we can look at this, and I've heard this story before because, as I said, he spoke before I did at an event. It was very interesting to me, Bill, that here's a guy that's like a church group leader growing up. He's AJ because he's apple juice. Everything's great. Goes away to college. Kind of like this drinking thing, drinking with the faculty. It's okay. Normal people do this.
Well, yeah, and everything that you see in the media, you talk about James Bond earlier, you've got the affluence and luxury with champagne, and everything was celebrating, and it turned into, whether it was a champagne toast after a football game or, just having a few beers, camping or, doing, boating or you know, things that were fun kind of as we got older included alcohol. And I'm not sure when, you know, that dependency, you know, when I crossed that line from, you know, social to it being a problem. But, I was on the ride for a long time. And, you know, we've got an enemy that seeks only to steal, kill, and destroy. And, you know, with me, he didn't break the door down with an AK-47. He came in and stole a little bit over a long time.
Wow. That's profound.
It is good.
Mm-hmm. So when did you find yourself starting to question whether or not you were a problem drinker?
Well, I think, you know, I started hiding it. Things were going well with work.
So we've already gotten out of college.
Yeah, we got out of college.
So you graduated from college.
Oh, yeah, graduated from college, got a good job. My employer actually, you know, paid for my higher education. I went back, got my master's degree, moving around the country with
what
promotions.
What did you get your master's in?
MBA in international marketing.
Okay, I'm going to go with highly functioning guy who's drinking a lot.
Yeah,
at this
point. And you know, not to minimize the consequences, but it did sneak up over time. You know, I was chasing the reward and the promotion, and I was, you know, pretty good at what I did or was in the right place at the right time, but I experienced a lot of success and was recognized with, you know, winning trips and getting promoted. I think at one point we moved, yeah, three times with three pretty big promotions in a 5-year period. So yeah, things were moving pretty quick in the corporate world, and I thought I had this thing dialed in.
Well, a guy should be able to drink when he's having that much success.
Well,
aren't
you doing business dinners and things where you're meeting clients and people, and all of a sudden drinks are served and a wine at dinner and maybe after drinks because you're trying to build a relationship?
Yeah, and all of that was going on. And,
okay.
You know, so it was, you know, cocktails with dinner. It was entertaining clients. But where my drinking, you kind of went off the walls a little bit. You know, I kind of had, you know, two lives. I had the corporate America life where everything was controlled. But then, I mean, I was a skier and I was a, you know, kind of an extreme athlete wannabe. And I kind of mixed with the ski bums. I lived out west and loved to ski. And there were times where after the cocktails and the dinner party with the executive crowd, you know, then I'd go to the bar and you know, drink beer and throw darts and have fun with the guys that were in town on ski trips. And it was still part of that party and the celebration. So when those two worlds, you know, kind of collided, you know, somebody was, you know, my wife was telling me that, you know, you're drinking too much, right? I knew that I needed to tone it down. But, you know, that's when the denial and, you know, the rationalization and the minimizing and, you know, I didn't think that I had a problem because I never got a DWI, never, you know, lost a job, never, you know, had any consequences that went with, you know, sleeping in, missing meetings, missing appointments. I mean, I was still getting promoted. Mm. You know, things were still going well.
Well, let's back up a little bit here because I'm kind of curious. We got out of college and we got our MBA and we're doing well. I haven't heard anything about God and church in a long time. What was going on there?
Well, yeah, and that's really what happened is, you know, my faith took a back seat. You know, I was, you know, my kingdom come, my will be done. You know, I wasn't pursuing God and what he had for me. You know, those lessons that I knew as a kid growing up took a back seat when I went away to college and kind of stayed in the background.
Mm.
You know, we still... I still, you know, thought I was a good guy. You know, I still did the right thing and, you know, loved my neighbors and, you know, kind of, you know, followed the rules for the most part. But I had this enemy that was marginalizing me in the background and, you know, keeping me on the sidelines. And, you know, I'd go to church and, you know, so now, you know, we're kind of fast forwarding. I'm, you know, married, have, you know, two kids and, you know, I wanted the girls to have, you know, kind of that faith-based, you know, childhood that I had.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to be involved in church and go to Sunday school. And, yeah, you know, that's really when, you know, the wheels were coming off the wagon. I couldn't keep it together. You talk about, you know, step two and, you know, realizing that, you know, higher power, you know, is what you needed to, you know, get over the insanity. And it reminds me of, you know, Matthew 19:26. You know, this isn't possible with man, but with God, all things are possible. And I was trying to manage something that was out of control, doing the right thing, knowing what the right thing is. You get into, you know, Romans 8 and, you know, why do I do what I know I shouldn't do? But it was out of control and I just hadn't admitted it yet.
Yeah. It's out of control. It doesn't matter if we admit it or not. It's out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And the insanity there is, I got this. I'm doing well. All these other areas, you know, maybe it's my family. Maybe they just don't appreciate all the good stuff I'm doing because I'm out there busting it. I'm a good provider. And in the world's eyes, like you read out of Romans 12,
mm-hmm.
you know, we
mm-hmm.
don't want to be run by the world. We need to be transformed. And here's a guy that had a great start. Obviously has a lot of talent. He gets his MBA. He got, you know, he's got his BA. And he's getting promoted 3 times in 5 years at a pretty competitive corporate level. But he's got a double life going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got my ski guys, and then I got my corporate guys, and then I got my family guys. And the church thing, well, it's not that big a deal till my daughters start going.
Mm. We know a lot of people like that, don't we, George?
Well, it's easy because you got success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're working hard, you know. He's not a bad guy, but it sneaks up on you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, and that's really where, you know, if my story can you kind of bring a spotlight to that and, you know, save somebody from you're going down the path that I went down. You know, I mean, I was so, you're looking at the world, you know, through whether it's beer goggles or delusion or you're caught up in, you know, what the enemy's trying to do, changing your perspective of reality. And that gets in a little bit to the book we'll talk about later. But, you know, I wasn't seeing clearly. You know, I mean, I wasn't thinking clearly. You had things compartmentalized where I was focused on work and that seemed to be going well. You know, I was doing what I could do to be a good dad and be a good provider. But I know now that, you know, I was marginalized. I mean, the girls didn't get 100% of the dad that loved them. You know, they got a marginalized counterfeit that was, you know, being hijacked by the world. And, you know, the alcohol certainly diminished my capability to be everything that I could be.
Mm-hmm. David, we have an endless ability to delude ourselves, don't we?
Yeah.
Wow, Bill, you're sure quotable tonight.
Who'd you steal that from?
I think I made it up.
I like it going back to Proverbs 2 about, you know, Proverbs 3. That all ties in with this because we forgot the teachings when we were young.
Right.
We forgot that.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm doing so good, you know, and a lot of times we hear stories where, you know, everybody just crashes and it never works. Here's a guy that's had a lot of success.
Mm-hmm.
And in the world's eyes, it's like, that's a guy I'd want to hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
But the longer it goes on, part of the problem is he's got so much ability, he probably kept it going a lot longer than he could have or should have because he's got enough game to cover it. Was that fair?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, throughout the course of this, I mean, it's not to say that there weren't any consequences. You know, I ended up going through a divorce along the way, and that's, you know, that's the biggest regret that I've got. You know, that's not anything that I signed up for and anything that the girls chose. You know, that's not how I wanted to write the ending to this thing, but you know, that's what happened. And you know, the counseling or the education that I got at the time that I first went to treatment, you know, was focused on what you can change what you can. And you know, kind of, if you go back to a marriage that isn't working for whatever those reasons are, you know, you're probably going to drink again. And you know, nobody spoke life into the marriage. Nobody mm-hmm. spoke life.
Yeah, we're going to pick up this conversation. This has gotten real meaty real fast.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about what you did in rehab and the marriage and all that. You're listening to Real Recovery tonight. We have David Carlson in studio. So thanks for joining us. We'll be back in just a minute. We are so glad you're with us tonight on Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us. Bill, George, we have Logan at the board tonight, and David Carlson in studio. You know, George, when we talk about the enemy's strategies, he wants to show you the bait and then hide the hook, because there are lots of short-term pleasures, but he hides the long-term misery, doesn't he?
Yes.
And just before we went to break, David was talking about the sadness of the misery that involved with the loss of his marriage. Did I say that right?
Yeah, you
was
did.
That?
Yeah, that was a pretty good way to come back.
Okay, good.
You did, and it is sad.
It's sad. It's very sad. Are you in a place to talk about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, before break, you know, we just talked about kind of not having some of the consequences that kept me in denial for so long. And, you know, when I came, you know, through the first, you know, recovery, you know, treatment program, you know, the lesson that I took away was, you know, you got to put sobriety first. And, you know, the marriage was, we were already separated, and, you know, the Serenity Prayer to me at the time, you accept what you can't change. That was me. Courage to change what you can't, or courage to change what you can change was for me to change me, accept what I can change. And I took that to mean that I couldn't change the circumstances of my marriage, and wisdom to know the difference. I figured I'd learn that over time. So, yeah, I survived the divorce, and yeah, put some, you know, some years of sobriety under my belt, and you got the drinking under control for a period of time, but that it didn't reconnect me with Christ. You know, God of my understanding in the recovery rooms, kind of got me thinking in that direction, but it didn't move from my head to my heart. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't living in the freedom provided in Christ. I was, working a program. Mm-hmm. and that worked for a while. Like I said, survived the divorce and, did, the every other weekend thing with the kids and, things got better, but it didn't have the staying power that was needed for anybody. And then, I think it was somewhere between, 3 years sober and, coming up on the fourth year, I started to make compromises. And, I think, we've got an enemy that seeks only to steal, kill, and destroy. And the voice that came back into my head, that quiet whisper, that, hooked me back in, was maybe you were drinking alcoholically because, you were unhappy or because of this or because of that. And, once I made that compromise in the recovery rooms, the big book says if you drink, you never, you can't stop and you won't quit till you're, it gets really bad. And I didn't find that to be true right away. It wasn't like from that first drink, I, fell off the curb and got hit by a bus. It was, it was a slow walk back into that, psychological descent into hell. But the road was faster. If it took me 20 years to start with, it was like 20 months, the next go around. Mm-hmm. And it came back. And, we hear this, all the time, when, people have, meetings and program, as part of their program, quit going to meetings and lose touch with your sponsor. And next thing you're vulnerable to relapse. And I was on that relapse roller coaster for another, 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm. So a couple of things that you brought up when you said compromise, what went off in your brain that, again, I don't know if I heard you the first time, but remind me again the compromise that got you back to drinking.
It was really stupid. I was out of town at work with some guys and, where my nickname used to be AJ, mm-hmm. for the apple juice, those, 3+ years of recovery, my drink of choice was, ice water with lemon. Mm-hmm. And that's just what I got. And I could go out with, in those, dinner party settings when people had, a glass of wine or, glass of scotch or whatever with dinner. And I'd just get my ice water with apple juice and I was fine. And I hadn't been going to meetings very regularly. I'd been traveling more with work and I found myself in a pizza joint of all places. And the waitress came and asked me what I wanted to drink. And I said, normal is ice water with lemon. I went to the restroom and when I came back, it was a pizza joint and they ordered a couple of pizzas with a couple of pitchers of beer and the waitress just poured a beer. So there was a beer next to, my table sitting and my water hadn't come yet. And I just was sitting there and one of the guys that I was working with, made a toast. And again, it's a celebratory thing. We were getting congratulated on a job well done. And next thing I know, everybody's picking up glasses to do cheers, and I didn't have my water in front of me, so I drank the beer. And it wasn't like, oh, off to the races, let's, pound this and order a pitcher and go back to the hotel room and get sloppy. It was, I had a beer and nothing bad happened. So when that marinated, the next weekend I was home alone and the girls were with their mom and I'm by myself. It's like, well, I had a beer a couple of weeks ago. Nothing bad happened. So maybe I can do this. Mm-hmm. So that's where the insanity came back in. And then I started to try to manage something that was unmanageable.
Wow.
Three things here that just stand out to me, if I could dive in here real mm-hmm. quick. Number one, about putting the program first. That's misinterpreted by a lot of places that I worked in recovery centers and by a lot of people I know and I did for a long time, is that it's a selfish program. It isn't. So it was all about us. That's what got us in there in the first place. Our recovery, we have to be conscious of other people. But, you know, working in the field for 20 years, that's been kind of the mantra at some treatment centers. Your program comes first. The other thing is counselors will tell you that if you go back to using, you're going to be right where you left off. Well, that's not true because we know we're on probation. We're going to behave for a while. Eventually, it'll come through. And so that one's not true. And the other one I hear, Bill, a lot is I stopped going to AA and stopped working with my sponsors, so I went back to drinking, which misses the obvious question of why did you stop going to your meetings? Why did you stop working with your sponsor? Usually because we didn't want to. We had other stuff that took the priority, and it gets back to, you know, your reading. We're transformed by the renewing of our mind. We got to put God first. It's not a selfish program. It's a God program. The reason the program doesn't work for you is you're supposed to work for the program, and the program is about walking with God. I'll shut up now.
No, that's really good stuff. Once again, I wish you were this good years ago.
Well, I don't have much time left, so be nice to me.
I'm going to
You
be
want
very...
my car.
I do want your car.
Yeah.
No, there's no... I'm not hiding that.
Okay.
I'm going to be very honest, very transparent.
Okay. But, you know, this is a great story, and I appreciate, as Bill uses the word transparency a lot, you're very open about this on, you know, what happened, and that's what happens to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you look in the rearview mirror, and you go, wow, how could I have been... How could I have done that? It's real easy.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, so... When the wheels came off the cart, you know, the second time, and it got bad. I mean, I remember you kind of looking back, you know, in hindsight, thinking how nice, you know, things were, or how, you know, much maybe I did accomplish, and some of the trips I'd been on, and you kind of, you know, the good things, and I had, you know, painted myself into such a corner that I didn't see that hope or a way out, and you know, not that I was ever thinking of doing anything to hurt myself. But I remember, you know, sometimes, you know, kind of praying, like, if I don't wake up from this, you know, that'll be okay. And the lie of the world is, you know, the kids are young, they're resilient, they'll be okay. And, you know, look at the train wreck that you're on, and why are you dragging everybody through this? And, you know, the world would be a better place without you. And, you know, that's where, you know, the enemy, again, I keep going back to seeks only to steal, kill, and destroy. He wants to steal your ambition. He wants to destroy your relationships, and he wants to kill your ability to do anything for Christ. And once you accept that, and, you know, that's where hopelessness comes in. And when you're in that place, it is impossible with man, but with God, all things are possible. And that's when my brothers, you know, really rallied around me and, you know, said, you may not have a year if you don't put this thing, you know, back into perspective. And, you know, you can't do it on your own, so you need to get back to your faith. And that's where, you know, I went to a faith-based recovery program. And that's where, you know, that quiet whisper, I started to hear God again.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reminded that my name, David, means, you know, beloved. And, you know, for 20 years in corporate America and chasing my kingdom come my will be done, you know, the world called me Dave, you know what I mean? And so it's a little thing, but, you know, 1 Corinthians 5:17, you know, where, you know, the old man is dead, the new man is gone. And I wanted to reclaim my birth name. I wanted to be David again, because I was beloved, and, you know, Christ got my attention, and, you know, the renewal of the mind happened. I didn't have to conform to the world. I could be transformed by the renewal of my mind, and that was putting Christ first. So my serenity prayer at that point became more the 11th step, you know, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, you know, seeking only knowledge of his will for me. And for me, that meant Matthew 6:33, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And what that did is it repurposed me. It gave me a freedom in Christ that was available to something that I couldn't work or earn on my own. And once that became real to me, yeah, I mean, there's just such a difference living in freedom.
Mm.
That's how you do it. How did you walk that out on a daily basis?
You know, in the recovery rooms, how often do you say the serenity prayer? A lot, right? I mean,
yep.
I mean, that's, you say that a lot. And for me, that step 11 prayer became the prayer that I said a lot. And, I even simplified it. You know, my prayer was pretty simple, and it was often, and it was persistent, and it was regular, and it was for weeks and probably over months. But it was, grant me knowledge of your will for me and courage to carry it out. And, when we, seek and you'll find, seek ye first the kingdom of God. And, it's not like playing hide and go seek. If somebody's hiding from you, you have to be intentional to go look for them. A blind squirrel can find a nut once in a while, but, you're going to be more effective if you're searching. So for me, seeking knowledge of God's will for me became deliberate. It was intentional. And I knew that there was a response to that that required obedience to have courage to step into that, whatever it looked like. If it wasn't getting on an airplane and chasing the jobs or the next promotion, I kind of accepted that my new life would look different than where I came from. And once I surrendered that, I was open to it. And when you have that Isaiah 6:8 prayer, "Here I am, send me," and you're willing to go where he wants you, that opens up a world of opportunity.
I love that.
So talk a little bit more, David, about this freedom in Christ that you're enjoying, because you've said that more than once, and I want you to tell our listeners again what that means to you.
Well, you're not handicapped. What the enemy intended for bad, God can use for good. And when you find that to be true in your life, there's freedom. So being repurposed and having that renewal of your mind and living in that freedom isn't being handicapped by your past. It's using your past to build a bridge to what God has intended for you. And it changes your perspective. It changes your outlook, and it changes your topography.
I don't know what topography means, but
we'll look that up on the break.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things to me is when you go to a secular treatment center that I worked at for 15 years, you get partial truths and in the recovery rooms. And one of them is first things first. Okay, I'm going to put my sobriety first. But where they got that was from Matthew 6:33, "Seek first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto you." A lot different than putting me first. So that's one of the things that can get lost in the message.
Is that the origin of the first step?
First things first. That's the slogan, yeah.
Okay.
And the origin of one day at a time is the next verse, Matthew 6:34, "Don't worry about tomorrow.
Right.
Each day is enough trouble of its own."
Love
so
it.
Those are some things you miss.
Okay, cool. All right, we'll take a little break. One more segment coming up with David Carlson on The Big Show, Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us. Be right back.
Life is dull, it's nothing but one big...
All right, we're back, and we're talking to David Carlson. He's written a book. How about that, George? You've never written a book, have you?
Oh, no.
I'm not sure if
you
wrote
one.
I would read it. Yeah,
well,
it's more of a
pamphlet.
It's a PDF file. It's going to be an electronic book. You can just download it. But this is an actual book you hold in your hands. And it's called Piercing the Veil by David Carlson, Revealing Illusion with God's Reality. And I open it up, and here's something. It says, "We are not defective. We've been deceived." So true.
That is good.
We've been lied to.
You'll get 2 weeks out of that. You're not defective, Bill. You've been deceived.
That's true.
You've been deceived your whole life.
That's true.
Yeah.
So
how easy that is, though, because those fiery darts from the enemy, he's talking, "You're a loser. You're no good. You really messed this up. This time, you really did it. There's no fixing it now."
Well, and before break, I think I mentioned something about topography, but really it's having that new trajectory. We talk about defining moments and choices and how things can be pivotal. And putting God first and seeking his will and having courage to step into that, really has changed my perspective and outlook on, living life now differently than how it was before. The big book says, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. And, we spent the first couple of segments on what things used to be like and what happened. And, now, putting God first, it just changes everything. Whether it's in Minnesota, doing things with the nonprofit ministry that I started, or you know, working on some community outreach events, or writing the book, or my consulting business that takes me, you know, out of town and traveling. Yeah, God can use me wherever He takes me. It's not where I want to go. And yeah, I mentioned Isaiah 6:8 before. You know, here I am, send me. And when that's a genuine prayer, and when you've surrendered all and you're willing to be obedient to let Him use you where He wants you and how He wants you, that does open up just a whole new world of opportunities.
Another one of the difference between secular groups and Christian groups is in the secular groups, the motto is, if somebody asks you to do something and you can do it, you don't say no. The Christian groups, it's God asking you. Whole different game.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you're waiting around for somebody to ask you. And if you're walking with the Lord, you'll know when He's talking to you and opportunities come up, right?
Well, yeah, and I think there's, I refer to it as a spiritual acuity, but it comes with pursuing God's will. And, you know, He says, you know, my sheep hear my voice. So there's an element of being intentional about listening. And it's not just seeking His will and trying to hear His voice to listen, but then there's a call to action. He says, follow me. And then He says, go and make, you know, go and make disciples of all nations. But, you know, I take that to mean, you know, go and make a difference in the world where He's put you. Make a difference in your community, make a difference in your neighborhood. It doesn't have to be across the pond. It can be across the street.
Mm-hmm.
We can be more authentic and transparent with ourselves at the water cooler. And I just found freedom in, you know, being, you know, not having that double life, you know, with, you know, not that you have to be on the corner with the sign and the, you know, fire and brimstone and, you know, be, you know, the, not everybody's called to evangelism. But we can still be authentic to who Christ is in us and let Him be visible where He takes us. And I've found myself on, you know, projects in my, you know, business, you know, realm where, the Holy Spirit just kind of envelops me and I start, you know, kind of praying to myself, but I pray over the safety of the operation. I pray over the equipment. I pray for the safety of the crew. I pray for the guys that will be working in this chemical plant or this refinery, or, it's just such a different, you know, outlook on things. I'm not working, you know, for a paycheck. I'm trying to, I'm just living differently, and people see that in me, and it provides opportunities. You know, I think, you know, George, you know, heard that when we spoke at the event, and here I am. You know, this wasn't on my radar a month ago. You know, God just continues to open opportunities, and I keep saying yes.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And it was nice. That's one of those deals where you, you know, at the end of the day, you got other things you can do, but you go. Because, you know, God's got something for you. And you and I meet, you know, we click. You wanted to give me your book and come on the show. And it's like, gosh, it's just great. A lot of the stuff you've said tonight has really helped my recovery about putting God first.
Mm-hmm.
I need to hear that all the time, Bill, because my natural way is, okay, I'm good enough now. I'm going to start taking stuff back.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I need to do.
Right.
I don't know what
right.
I need to do.
David, what was
good
the,
stuff, David.
It
Thank
is,
you.
What was the most difficult chapter of this book for you to write?
It, you know, how do you end it?
Oh yeah,
yeah, because it's a story. It's not my testimony. It's not. It really is a book about pursuing God and responding to that call to action. And you know, I've been told that it's told in a, you know, pretty, you know, straightforward, practical way, but. Yeah, my testimony keeps going. So, as I was winding down, you know, how to end this book, I started writing kind of the next book, and then, you know, I just kind of listened to, hearing God, and you know, I have a lot of other stuff that I've started to write that doesn't get out of the computer and hasn't been to print, and it was just impressed upon me like this is done, it's ready, get it out there as it is. Because, you know, the next book is different. So just kind of finding out, you know, coming to conclusion of when this book was done and that it was good enough, or, you know, that this was ready.
Mm-hmm.
Our next book's going to be better, too.
Let's get the first one done.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it'll be better than the first one.
Yeah. Second one will definitely be better than the first one.
Oh, yeah, I like that. I think sharing what God's done in your life with as many people as you can is a big deal. And to take the time and work to write a book to get that message out there for otherwise, it's just people you meet.
Mm-hmm.
And this opens it up to a lot more. I think that's great.
What when you were doing the research for this and you were just doing a lot of self-examination and you're telling your story, there's so much scripture in this book, which I love. I love every time I open up and I look at every page and I think, oh, my gosh, there's the Bible almost on every page.
Well, I didn't want it to be, you know, as told by Dave. I mean, these are things, biblical truths that became real in my life that made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So it does tie back. Everything ties back to scripture because that's what the truth is.
Mm-hmm. So in a nutshell, there's this page where Georgia says, in a nutshell, seek him first, listen to him, follow him, and go and make disciples. This call to action sounds easy enough, but it's difficult to sustain in a broken world full of Satan's deception and illusions. Because he is going to be lying every day. That's what he does best. So staying the course, seeking him, listening, following, going and making disciples, you stay active for the Lord.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about.
In our book, there'll be something about golf in there, too. So
golf, yes.
You know, a little golf action.
Yeah.
But you know what? It really is simple.
Oh, I missed another 2-foot putt. Wow, that'll be in the book, too.
Okay, that was mean.
I know it was mean, but it's just true.
It's honest. It's honest, yeah. But, you know, I like that. It's simple. It's scriptural. And you got to do it. And you show up and you do it. Who are you working for? You mm-hmm. seeking God first or yourself?
Mm-hmm.
I need to always look in the mirror on that one, Bill, because we take it back.
Mm-hmm.
He does all these things for us, and then we go, well, I did it. You know, mm-hmm. I got it.
So when you went to rehab, how long were you there in recovery program?
The first one was a 28-day program,
okay.
And the second one was almost a year long.
Wow.
Yeah. That was a commitment, and you don't make a commitment to that unless it's, A, doing something for you, or, B, unless you need it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's, you know, I needed the time to be set aside, set apart for to start hearing God, and then I made a commitment to finish it.
Yeah.
So
you're a bright, intelligent, high-functioning guy that gets a lot done, and you were able to put a year aside of your life to find out what God wanted for you and to get clean and sober.
That's where it started.
Yep. So we've got to wrap up in about a minute. There are listeners tonight that are in a situation maybe similar to yours. What's your advice to them?
My advice is reach out. You know, the enemy, the age-old strategy is to divide and conquer, and he does that through isolation. So if you're sitting there feeling sorry for yourself, call somebody. And there's a lot of things that you can get plugged into. I didn't realize that every day there's, you know, something good to do. And, you know, there were days that I just, you know, drank myself into tomorrow because I didn't look at what my options were.
Mm.
And, there's things that you can do today and start with calling somebody, whether that's a friend or a sponsor or family. But, you know, don't sit there by alone and just, you know, drink into tomorrow.
Mm. What if the phone weighs 2,000 pounds and you'd rather just drink?
Pick up the phone.
The 2,000-pound phone? Because it feels so heavy?
With man, nothing is possible, but with God, all things are. So,
yeah, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
That's the one I was looking for.
Yeah, like tomorrow you can wake up and tune into Faith Radio at 6 o'clock and hear Bill Arnold on here. That'll get your day started.
I'm just going to sleep here. I'm going to sleep underneath the counter here. Why not?
I always like turning in and listening to Swindoll and Jeremiah because it always helps me.
Yeah, I agree.
Can I throw a plug in for the book if anybody wants it?
Mm-hmm. We'll put it on the website for sure, but what is it?
Okay, it's davidcarlson.com, and since I was invited to be here, I did throw a little discount on it to cover shipping.
Awesome. So David Carlson, CARLSON.com is where the website is. You can go take a look and see the book, and that's where to go to buy it. So, George, that wraps up.
I got mine for free.
I got mine for free, too.
Yeah.
That wraps up another award-winning episode, George, Real Recovery. Thanks for being with us tonight. Thanks you for listening. Thanks for praying. Take care of yourself. Be good to yourself. Lean into God. He loves you. So do we. Good night, everyone. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.